Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 3, Gajendra's Prayers of Surrender, Text Number 19. Yam Dharma Kamartha Vimukta Kama Vajanta Ishtam Gitim Apnuvanti Kim cha shisho ratyapi deham avyayayam. Karoti me devra dayo vimokshanam. Yam, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who? Dharma kama artha vimukta kama. Persons who desire the four principles of religion, economic development, sense gratification, and salvation. Bhajantaha. By worshipping. Ishtam. The objective. Gatim, destination. Apnuvanti, can achieve. Kim, what to speak of. Cha, also. Ashisha, other benedictions. Rati, he bestows. Api, even. Deham, a body. Avyayam, spiritual. Karotu, may he bestow benediction. May unto me. Adabra daya, the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is unlimitedly merciful. Vimokshanam, liberation from the present danger and from the material world. Translation of Prabhupada by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. After worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, those who are interested in the four principles of religion, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation obtain from Him what they desire. What then is to be said of other benedictions? Indeed, sometimes the Lord gives a spiritual body to such ambitious worshippers. May that Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is unlimitedly merciful, bestow upon me the benediction of liberation from this present danger and from the materialistic way of life. Purport. Some men within this material world are akami, free from material desire. Some are ambitious to get more and more material profits. And some desire fulfillment in religious life, economic development, sense gratification, and finally, liberation. Akama sarvakarma va, moksha kama udaradi, tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. It is recommended that whatever one's position, whether one demands no material profit, all material profit, or ultimately liberation, one should offer his obedient devotional service to the Lord. And one will get what he desires. Krishna is so kind. Ye tam mam prapadyante tam sataiva bhajamyaham. The Lord reciprocates. Whatever, even an ordinary living entity wants, Krishna gives. Krishna is situated in everyone's heart, and he gives what is desired by the living entity. Ishvara sarvabhutanam riddeshi arjunatishtati brahmayan sarvabhutani yantra rudani maya. Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. The Bhagavad Gita, 1861. The Lord gives everyone an opportunity to fulfill his ambitions. Even such a devotee as Dhruva Maharaj wanted the material benediction of a kingdom greater than that of his father, and although he received a spiritual body, he also got the kingdom. For the Supreme Personality of Godhead does not disappoint anyone who takes shelter of his lotus feet. Therefore, since Gajendra, king of the elephants, has surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead to get free from the present danger, and indirectly from the present danger of materialistic life, why should the Supreme Lord not fulfill his desire? After worshiping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, those who are interested in the four principles of religion, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation obtain from him what they desire. What is to be said of other benedictions? Indeed, sometimes the Lord gives a spiritual body to such ambitious worshippers. May that Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is unlimitedly merciful, bestow upon me the benediction of liberation from this present danger and from the materialistic way of life. As we heard before, that in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it mentions Nigama Kalpatara Galitam Palam Sukamukad Amrita Drava Samyutam Pibata Bhagavatam Alam Rasam Aliyam Muhur Aho Rasika Bhuvika Bhuvi Bhavikaha. That, oh, this Srimad Bhagavatam, which is known as Nigama, the Vedic wisdom, or the Vedic wisdom, Nigama Kalpatara. The Vedic wisdom can give us whatever we want. After all, there are living entities, whether we're conscious of them or not, who are demigods. And there are others in other species of life. Even the demigods have gradations. Some of them are Gandharvas. Some of them are Apsaras. Some of them are Nar Kim Purushas. Kim means what, and Purusha, what kind of person is that? What kind of man is that? So I guess they look a little different from human beings. Then there's Kim Purushas. What's the other Purusha? Kim Nara? Are you sure? Kinaras. Yeah, the Kinaras. Anyhow, there are many different living entities of the 400,000 species of human beings. We only see very few of them on this planet. And what to speak of the other species of life. So how did the soul get put into that body? That science is explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam and other Vedic literature, how it happens. But we should know what the science is, because, after all, we're not going to be in this body that long. As I mentioned before, Brahma's life, which is in our lifetime, in our calculation, 311 trillion, 40 billion years, is only one exhalation of Mahavishnu. So unless Mahavishnu is breathing absolutely slowly, or extremely slowly, in the spiritual world, time passes quite rapidly. Compare our time passes. And Lord Brahma's second is approximately 100,000 of our years, more like 90,000, which means that in 1 second of Brahma's life, we go through 1,000 births and deaths, if we live that long, 100 years at a time. And for Brahma, a second is a second. And for us, 1,000 births, living 100 years in each time, is a second for Brahma. And yet we're thinking we're going to be here for a long time. Well, we're wrong. So how is it that we're in this body, and how are we going to get our next body, which will come very shortly? What would be the... So, there is a sequence of events that happen, and these are explained in Bhagavad Gita. For instance, Krishna tells us that presently we're entrapped by a material body which has two characteristics. One of them is it covers our consciousness so we can't see reality. And the other is it's forcing us to do things which we probably shouldn't be doing. So how is it happening? What's the mechanism? So then Krishna tells Arjuna, because it's not a secret, Krishna is not trying to hide things from us. Krishna is not trying to keep us in the material world so he won't reveal actually how we got here and how to get out of here. He's spending a lot of time, the opposite, trying to tell us how to get out of here and where we can go if we want to. So here it says Krishna can take us anywhere. If you ask Krishna take you to Brahmaloka, he might take you to Brahmaloka, but first he'll tell you how to get there. In other words, just saying, Krishna, one day you wake up and say, hey Krishna, could I go to Brahmaloka today? Well, Krishna will note that down, that here's a soul, he at least had some intention to go to Brahmaloka, but if I told him how to get there, he wouldn't listen to me. Just like I said, today you wake up, I want to go to Maribor. You tell your temple president, Ananda. But you don't ask him how to get there. That's if he agrees. Say he's very, Ananda Prabhu is very generous. He always lets people go where they want. Sure, you can go there. But then you have to ask someone how to get there. Just having the desire to go there, however small it may be, is not sufficient. You have to have a sufficient desire to actually really want to go there, to take at least a step towards there, and that to find out which direction is, and take at least one step towards there. Then there's some sincerity being shown. And if you get somehow or another make it out of Ljubljana, and you ask someone on the road, how do I get to Maribor? Then that's showing that you're actually interested in getting there. But if you just talk about how you're going to go to Maribor one day, how you really want to get there, but you didn't ever take a step in that direction, then, of course, you'll never get there. Now, Brahmaloka is a little further away than Maribor, so you may have to take in a few extra steps to get there. But if you take the, if you go in that direction, you ask someone who knows how to get there, and there's not too many people who know how to get to Brahmaloka nowadays, but if you find out how to get there and you start making some attempt to get there, then eventually you might get there. Or maybe you get some consolation prize, like you wind up in Indraloka. You say, well, I think I'll settle down here for a while. Food's good. Music is really good. I think I'll settle down here. You know, Brahmaloka, who knows, you know, a little farther away. Everything's available. Nigama Kalpa Tarar Gali Tam. The Bhagavatam tells us, perhaps not in every detail, about how to go to all the different destinations. But it's not meant to do that. Because it's really not meant to encourage us to go to Indraloka or Brahmaloka or whoever else that's described there. Matter of fact, it's meant to discourage us from going there. When we're in this eighth canto, we'll find out what problems I get if I go to Brahmaloka or even if I go to Indraloka. We've already had Vritrasura wind up in the heavenly planets and all the demigods come out to fight against him and Vritrasura is stomping on them, crushing them. You work so hard to get to Indraloka and suddenly it's lights go out and you're back in Ljubljana. In other words, even there, the heavenly planets are somewhat glorified because they are, comparatively to us, quite enjoyable. You can live there for comparison to us for millions of years. And the food, certainly, even the prasadam there is a lot better. The flowers, they all have an aroma. And it's heavenly. And you can get intoxicated there with some rasa, And it's actually healthy. It helps you live even longer. If you take somarasa, you get up on time every morning. And you never feel sleepy. Of course, when that foot of Rikasura comes down on you, you say, where's my somarasa? It won't help you very much. But anyhow, in normal times, somarasa is quite a good medicine. But as we look at the Bhagavatam and we look at the Bhagavad Gita and all the other the Vaishnava literatures, it's definitely not recommended to go there. But the possibility of going there is there just by chanting Hare Krishna. And the example of that is in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Now the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, if you've read it, then Gop Kumara is going from one planetary system to the next, and the only way he's doing it is by chanting the Gopal mantra. Although it seems that he's really quite fortunate chanter, that he seems to go instantaneously from this planet to Indraloka, to Mahaloka, to Siddhaloka, whatever. But actually it's over lifetimes that this is going on. In any case, he's not doing yoga. He's not even doing any meditation. He's not even taking his vitamin pills every day. The way he's getting there is just by chanting the Gopal mantra. And gradually he's becoming elevated. Now, if we could actually chant the Hare Krishna mantra, we would actually become elevated too. The only problem is we have a lot of problems, like 10 offenses, for instance. If we ever hear the 10 offenses, well, sure, big deal. I definitely don't consider Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma to be on the same level as Lord Vishnu, because I don't believe in any of them. As far as I'm concerned, you know, Brahma and Shiva, they're just in this book and they don't exist anywhere else. And Vishnu, who knows about Vishnu, you know. So, I don't even consider it an offense. I definitely don't commit it. Because I don't believe in any of these people. So how can I be offensive when I chant the holy name? And when we're chanting, where is our mind? Are we in samadhi, just hearing the holy name and immersed in the ocean of the holy, sound vibration of the holy name? Or are we thinking about 100 different things when the kirtan's going on? The worst of which would be, I'm thinking, I can't wait till this kirtan to stop. It's agitating my mind. I know devotees who've said like that. I can't chant this mantra because every time I chant, my mind gets agitated. Sure, your mind gets agitated because you become aware of how agitated your mind is, that's all. Before that, you're unconscious. So you wake up when you chant Hare Krishna and you realize what a miserable state your mind is going through. Therefore, although Krishna can give us whatever we want, we have to make a decision what we actually want. It's like a child. The child tells his mother, Mother, I want to go to the beach. No, I want to eat. I would like to go to sleep. I want to go out and play. So the mother can't figure out what the child wants. But if the child says, I want to eat, I want to eat, I want to eat, then the mother thinks, well, my child wants to eat, so let me feed him. So similarly, when we have 10,000 desires going through our mind, Krishna is keeping track of them, but since we have so many desires, we're not really serious about any of them. When someone asks Prabhupada, what do you think of Buddhism? This is in the early 70s. And Prabhupada said, well, do you practice Buddhism? And the person who asked the question said, no. So Prabhupada said, do something. Practice Buddhism. Do something practical. And then you can come back and ask. Rather than just mentally speculate, do nothing more than just everything is within the mind and nothing is really practically done. The only thing I do practically is when I sit down to eat. And then I'm thinking about a million things anyhow. Before I eat, I'm thinking for hours before, I can't wait till I eat. When you're eating, you think, I can't wait till I sleep. So we're always somewhere else in the past, in the future. And if we happen to wind up in the present, we get afraid what happened to the past and the future. So one has to decide, what do I really want? And then at least do something to get it. Otherwise, one will go nowhere, just on the mental platform. Of course, the basic principles, we always want to eat, we want to sleep, mate, and defend. So those are always there. People don't have to convince us. We don't have to have lectures about why we should eat. My dear devotees, today's not a fast day, so please eat. Get enthusiastic about eating. Let's go for it. When prasadam comes, don't hesitate. Eat. No one has to give a lecture about that. And at night, we don't have to tell the devotees, it's almost time to sleep. Please go to sleep. And even if we can't go to sleep, we have that, you know, I should be asleep. I'd like to be asleep. No one has to give you some pep talk, explain all the reasons why you should sleep. And of course, modern society, they're encouraging people for sex, but it's not that before people were encouraged by mass propaganda for sex life, no one had sex. And of course, defense has become very important. People can't get enough of it. But before, people were defending, somehow or another, every species of life. But to make another decision what we should do in between our eating, sleeping, mating, defending, that we're hearing, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, the glories of something. People since their birth have been encouraged to be in the bodily concept of life. As soon as we're born, you know, immediately, goo, 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 goo. And we smile and everyone says, hey, he smiled, everything. Success. You are that body, goo, 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 goo. So we've been trained up in the bodily concept of life since we've been born. And everything we've been doing since then has been based on that. So basically speaking, people's objective is quite narrow. That is, people are basically concerned about eating, sleeping, mating, defending, and whatever technological advancements are there, it's all about that, that's all. Why do most people use their smartphone? Because they're stupid, that's why. So they need a phone which is smart. And what do they use their smartphone for? Figuring out how to eat, sleep, mate, and defend. Because they've lost the ability to do those things. They got to look it up on Google. But actually, in between that, if one is fortunate and gets good association, such as the Srimad Bhagavatam, then one can hear about, or the Vedic literature, hear about other opportunities that the human form of life can actually give one. Now, in the Vedic culture, they also had varieties of seminars, varieties of opportunities to go to theater, and there were different persons who were advertising. Just like when Pariksit Maharaj was sitting on the bank of the Ganges, asking, "What now? I'm about to leave my body. What is my duty?" There are a lot of people out in the audience, great sages and munis and learned scholars, and they gave them all different directions. They were all equally convinced. There's always been Jaimini, Vaishasika, and Gautama, all different sages, ready to give different opinions and encouraging people to follow them. Because those who people pick up on their philosophy, they're generally the people on that level who can actually take advantage of it and make some kind of progress by hearing from what they have to say and practically applying it within their lives. But Srimad Bhagavatam is a little different because Pariksit Maharaj only had 7 days and he wasn't about to practice karma yoga, jnana yoga, or even go to a yoga school and learn how to do lotus posture. So when the snake bit him, he'd die in lotus. Because everyone knows dying in lotus is auspicious. No, he had no time for that. Therefore, in these first 10 and 9 cantos, everything's going to be described practically about in at least an outline about this universe to discourage Pariksit Maharaj from becoming lamenting, oh, if only I could go to the heavenly planets, then the snake bird wouldn't be so bad getting bitten by him. A little pain at first, but then I'd be there in the Nandakandana forest. Now he's being told about all these places for our benefit and being discouraged from going there. It is all qualitatively, it's similar to what we're going through. Birth, death, old age, and disease, only it lasts a little bit longer. And the problem with that is when you're living a life of hundreds and millions of years, you get a little attached to it. You actually start thinking that I have a settled position here. Everything's going to be all right. You know, we've been married with my wife for 100 billion years. So we seem to be, you know, we're soulmates. And then suddenly you're back in Ljubljana. What happened? You wake up from that dream and you're in another one. How disappointing. But, therefore, to go to the spiritual world is what's advertised here. But in order to do that, we just have to chant Hare Krishna. But then we have to find out how to chant Hare Krishna. And what do we have to do in this short lifetime to become qualified to actually chant Hare Krishna and actually mean it, to understand what it means and to actually mean it, that we actually want to engage in Krishna's loving service. So in order to do that, we have to actually not theoretically believe in Krishna, we have to experience Krishna. We have to experience to even a slight degree what loving service to Krishna means. Otherwise, how can we desire it? And everything is based on desire. And desire is based upon experience. And our experience will be based upon what we hear from others who have experience and follow how they've achieved that experience, what they did to achieve that experience. Just like the success story of Narada Muni, he didn't just wake up one day, he was Narada Muni. Actually, he woke up one day, and he was the son of a maidservant. Because he got cursed by the demigods when he was that demigod. What was the demigod's name again? Upavarna, yes. So he woke up one day, and he was a maidservant's son. But then he had a story to tell how he was serving them during the rainy season, and he ate some of their prasadam, and it tasted good. Maybe ask them if there was a restaurant nearby where you could go Govindas. But he got attracted to the prasadam. He became prasadam. And then he developed some faith in the sages. Maybe they got something going here. And so he sat there and he listened to what they had to say. He said, well, that sounds pretty good. Maybe I should try it out myself. And then he asked them, what should I do practically in my life to attain what you've attained? And they gave him instructions. And he listened attentively. And then when he got the opportunity, he put them into practice. And then Krishna revealed himself because he was sincere. And then he spent the rest of his life further putting into practice what he had heard from the sages because he realized the results. And they were so encouraging that he spent the rest of his life trying to get that result again and again and again. So that much faith, taking some prasadam, hearing, and then try to put into practice what we hear. And then if we get a happy result, then we'll become encouraged to put it more into practice. And then gradually, if we have the good fortune of hearing persons who are on the path and have gone further than we are, can tell us what the next step we have to take. And if we're willing to take that step and then get the next experience, that should encourage us to keep on going on and on and on until we can finally come to the actual goal and desire only to please Krishna, because that will include all other desires, the fulfillment of all of the desires, because we'll be in love with the most wonderful person and his friends. And there can no, even in this world, they're always talking about love, love, love. You know, that's the main thing. Love your family, love your nation, love your cat, love your dog. But people are not satisfied with that love. Only when they love Krishna can they actually be satisfied. When they feel his love, when they experience their own love for Krishna and everyone related to them, and when they realize how wonderful Krishna is, how nice Krishna is, and how nice they become by finding out how nice Krishna is, can they actually go reach perfection. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions, comments? Yes.
Hare Krishna. Thank you. The story of Narada Muni, as you quoted, is very inspiring, and developing desires through hearing about other about Krishna from others and then getting experience looks like a very straight path. Just recently, one lady who has just joined asked, she said that she's very afraid because she feels so much joy in Krishna consciousness in the last few months, and but she sees that there are elder devotees who are very bitter. So she is very afraid how to avoid getting bitter, how to avoid becoming frustrated like some of these older devotees that talked to her.
Well, ask the older devotees who are bitter what they did wrong. So you can avoid it, what they went through. I mean, it's not... I'm sure, I don't know where she's presently a member of our movement, I assume it's our movement, but I imagine there must be some devotees who are older, who are not so bitter, who are actually, you know, made some progress in devotional service. So probably better off to ask them, you know, how they, what their success story is, rather than looking around for all the failures.
Is it altogether possible to progress and advance without any frustrations and disappointments?
No, that's not possible. This material world is meant for disappointment and frustration. That's part of our inspiration. Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavad Gita, without understanding the miseries of birth, death, old age, and disease, there's no impetus to make advancement in spiritual life. Everything was wonderful in the material world, just like in the heavenly planets. Why would we bother with Krishna consciousness? It would be a distraction. So frustration, you know, pain, suffering, that's necessary for spiritual advancement. There's no instance in our books that someone became a devotee in Srimad Bhagavatam and he just lived happily ever after. No problem. Prahlad Maharaj made friends with his father. His father took up the process. Sarjana Krishna got initiated by Lord Nrisingadev. It doesn't happen like that. There's always problems. Pandavas never made up with the... Yudhisthira Maharaj had no enemy. He personally, but he had a lot of enemies. Duryodhana, Dhritarashtra. He had a lot of enemies. Because that's the nature of the material world. And what to speak of our little cells, I mean, if we put it into even the forest around here for 17 years, 14 years, I guess, they were put into the forest. Was it 14? If we were put into the forest for 14 years, we probably wouldn't make it for a few months. We'd be so depressed. Unless there's that devotee who lives in the forest. I have to learn from him how to live there. Anything else?
Hare yes. Krishna.
You have the same question, sir?
Yes.
Okay, you can ask them. It's all right, don't worry.
Okay. There is one devotee, Yurgis Zagorskas, asking, Vaikatendra here prays also for delivering him from a materialistic way of life. He wants to be delivered to live again with his family, but don't want to be materialistic again.
Who is that?
Jurgis Zagorskas.
No, what's the, who is he talking about?
Vaikatendra here prays also for delivering him from a materialistic way of life. He wants to be delivered to live again with his family, but don't want to be materialistic again.
Did you say his family? Please bring me back to my same family. Is that what it said?
I don't know.
I don't remember where it said Gajendra was praying to go back to his family. I don't know where that is.
Okay, we need
Gajendra wants to get his spiritual body and go over the spiritual world, as far as I can say. This verse says, may that Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is unlimitedly merciful, bestow upon me the benediction of liberation from this present danger and from the materialistic way of life. I don't know. Okay, next question.
Okay, next question is from Avadhuta Rai Prabhu. It is said that at 16 years of age, Krishna returned to Mathura, but there is other opinion that Krishna did go to Mathura when he was 10 years old because his various ages of Balya, Pauganda, and Kaishorya each last for 3 years and 4 months. Both of these contradictory opinions are in the Bhagavatam. How do you explain this?
Whether Krishna went to Mathura when he was 10, or whether he was 16, I don't think it's a very important thing to figure out. The important thing is he went to Mathura. When he got there, they didn't check his birth time. Says, sorry, Krishna, you're too young to be a Mathura. You have to wait till he's 16 before you can kill Kamsa. No, he got there somehow or another. Even if he got there at 10 years old. 8 years, 7 years old, he lifted Govardhan. And 8 years old, he had the Rasa dance. And between 8 and 10, I don't know, 16. I have no idea. Do you know? He appeared to be 16, but he was actually 10. Anyhow, he was quite precocious, Krishna.
Okay, the second question. The purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 11.24.10 says, although Lord Brahma is the most powerful mystic, his body, which pervades all material existence, is material. Question, what does this mean? Are all the material elements in the universe the body of Brahma, what?
No, Brahma has a separate body. Nor is the material elements coming from Brahma, they're coming from Mahavishnu. He's a secondary creator. So is all pervading? I don't know. His knowledge, it says, maybe all pervading, but himself, only Krishna in this universe is all pervading. Krishna and Brahma are competing with each other to being all-pervading. No, the elements are Krishna's elements. They're all controlled by Krishna. And Brahma, he has a separate form. He may have some control over the material elements, but they're not. He's also controlled by the mode of passion. He's not even separately controlled unless he becomes a controller, he's not an independent controller. He's also controlled either by the spiritual energy, like our Brahma, because he's a pure devotee, or he's controlled by the material energy, if it's a conditioned Brahma. But the elements are coming from Krishna, and they don't come from Brahma.
Okay, and the third
question?
Of course,
Brahma is an instrument for Krishna, but we never hear that Brahma's in every atom. We hear Krishna's in every atom. What do we hear? That Brahma has absolute control over the universe. Because he gets into trouble sometimes too.
The third question?
Yeah.
Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that Sankhya analysis can remove suffering. Could you kindly compare Sankhya analysis with psychoanalysis and explain why the first
we're really
is better
getting away from
than
our,
the second?
We should try to ask questions in relation to the verse. Otherwise, we really get far away from what we're get distracted. No, I can't do that. Psychoanalysis, and I don't think it's very important that we learn about psychoanalysis, because the people who are usually doing it, they're pretty crazy themselves. So I don't think it's so important to find out about Sankhya philosophy. If you want to read about Sankhya philosophy, that's more valuable. That's in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. We can refer you to the Kapila's analysis of Sankhya. The problems of birth, death, old age, and disease, and the desirability for pure devotional service. That's Sankhya. Okay. Thank you very much. Krandarai Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.